All right, let's turn our attention now to Neely Fuller Jr. So, Neely Fuller Jr., welcome back to WOL Radio.
Thank you, sir.
So, Neely Fuller Jr., how you doing, sir?
I'm still learning.
Yes, sir. I love to hear that. That's what we all should be doing. We're still learning. Since we're still learning, let's get the lesson started. The classroom is open. Our guest is Neely Fuller Jr., one of Dr. Francis Cress Wilson's mentors. I should say Dr. Francis Cress Wilson's mentor. And you know, Neely Fuller, Dr. Wilson sort of was one of the first ones to put the phrase racism, white supremacy into the lexicon. And now we hear it, everybody's talking about racism, white supremacy. I'm sure you hear it on the news. It's on Capitol Hill. Lawmakers are talking about it. So, yeah, but she was one of the ones who were talking about it, and people really didn't understand what she was saying. Is what she was teaching us about racism, white supremacy, what you know, because she learned a lot from you about racism, white supremacy, is it the same thing that the other people are talking about right now?
Well, when I met Dr. Wilson at a meeting in Washington, D.C., at what we call a Black Power meeting, kind of a loosely formed association of people who were just interested in doing something about racism, and we were up on U Street at a meeting, and people just kind of milling around talking to each other, and I just started talking to Dr. Wilson, and while we were talking about racism and its effects and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and what was going on in the world and what was going on right there in Washington and Martin Luther King, et cetera, and the assassination of Martin Luther King. And in the general talk, I made a statement. I said, well, Dr. Wilson, what we have to do is look at it like racism is a system. And you put it in capital letters. I said something to this effect. I don't remember the exact words. I said, it's the system of white supremacy, and it covers all areas of activity worldwide. I said, you don't narrow it down to just what people are doing over here and what people are doing over there on any given Thursday. I said, it's a complete worldwide package, well put together, well thought out, in fine detail, by people who are master thinkers at what you might call organizing people in such a way that these people serve them even when they don't see the people face to face. They got a worldwide system, and you call it the system of white supremacy. I said, and I would entice everybody to start calling it just that. Stop calling it capitalism over here and conservatism over there and liberalism over here. And I said, we got too many words designed to describe one thing, the system of white supremacy, capital letters. I said, that wraps up everything. That's wall to wall, floor to ceiling. Nothing outside of that. I said, all the other little words that we have just cause confusion. I said, whether this person is socialist or whether this person is capitalist or whether this person is communist, I said, when the white supremacists come in, the white supremacists always say, I'm all of them. I'm the whole show. I'm not some side issue. This is no side show. I run everything. So all that little nickel and dime stuff that people talk about every day, nowhere touches me and my power. We got a system that's well thought out and running like a well-oiled machine. And it's so huge that most people can't see how big it is, because it is so big, like having your nose up against a wall. Now, I don't know whether or not when I talked to Dr. Wilson then, I gave all those illustrations. But Dr. Wilson said to me, and she's been saying it ever since, right up to the time of her death, she said, she picked that up from me. That's one thing. She said, everything clicked when I said it's a system. S-Y-S-T-E-M. It's not something that, well, the Ku Klux Klan is going to march tonight, so now you'll see white supremacy in action. You're looking at white supremacy in action anywhere on the planet, any time of day or night. even when there's absolutely no white people within a million miles.
All right, hold that thought right there, Doc. We got to take a short break. Wow, interesting story. Never heard that one before. 800-450-7876. Get you in to speak to Neely Fuller Jr. We'll take your calls after this short break right here on 1450 WOL, where information is power. So, Neely Fuller Jr., I'm going to let you finish telling that story.
Yes. And so, like I said, Dr. Wilson said, you know, no, I never thought of it that way. I said, I'm around here screaming and yelling, ma'am. I didn't know her at all. I mean, she was just somebody I was talking to. I just met her. But I've been trying to tell other people prior to that. But people would say, uh-huh, yeah, I know what you're talking about. Yeah, I mean, you know, the white man this, white man that, you know. I did all that, you know. And then they'd go and start talking about something else. But she took an interest in that. Just that one thing that I said. And she said, I need to talk about this more with you. So we started meeting this almost every other night over a period of time, or at least once or twice a week at her apartment on Fairmont Street. And then we added a couple of people, and we sat around. And I said, kept saying, and I had a bunch of writing at that time, about 1,300 pages. And I was still using some old-fashioned terms like Negro. People who have my writings, I mean, going way back, you'll see it. You know, it's back when we called ourselves Negroes, all right? So all of my writings were about that. But I kept saying white supremacy, the system of white supremacy. And it covers nine areas of activity: economics, education, entertainment, labor, law, politics, religion, sex, and war. And I gave it that title, you know, in capital letters, the nine major areas of activity. I said, that's a lot of coverage. And what does it cover that in related relationships to who? To whom? And I said, the non-white people of the entire planet. The white supremacists went around, the people who thought up the idea of a thing called white supremacy, a world government called white supremacy, went around and looked at everything that everybody does when it comes to economics. And they looked at everything that everybody does when it comes to education. And they looked at everything that everybody does when it comes to entertainment, labor, law, politics. I mean, every little tribe that they could catch up with, they studied their economics, their educational system, the way they went about entertaining themselves, all the Indian tribes. How do you entertain yourself, Chief? Take me around here. Show me around. You know, when you get ready to have fun, how do you have fun? When you get ready to go to war, how do you go to war? See, they studied everybody in fine detail, everybody of color. Because they already knew about white people, because, you know, white people had been around white people. But when they went around other people, they studied everything about them, because they found out the more you know about people and the less they know about you, you can control them. Now, history has proven that. So they gave away just a little about themselves, just enough to be attractive. All right? The things they had discovered, the things they would do everywhere they went. Just enough to be attractive enough that people would tolerate them being around. So they could go just about anywhere because they knew how to talk to people, how to interact with people. And so they learned everything about people of color that was worth knowing in all of the areas of activity. Then they rolled up their sleeves, hypothetically speaking, and started burning midnight oil, saying, now how do we take them to the cleaners on an ongoing basis and make it permanent? Not something that's just going to appear for a few hundred years and then disappear. No. We're coming up with thousands of year plans. But, you know, because we're dealing with a huge thing and we want absolute control into infinity. And they came up with something called the system of white supremacy. But even today, I told people, and I'm still telling people right now, the white supremacists. If you start using that term, because many black people, just they hate that term, and they hate using it, and they say that they hate it. They've come on my programs all during the year and say, Mr. Fuller, out of all due regard to you and all like that, I mean, I don't have no respect for you because you keep giving the white man a whole lot of credit. I mean, that he don't deserve. You talking about he's supreme. You talking about white supremacists. Stop using that term. You're hurting black people. I said, if you use that term, you're telling the truth. And I still say that. So much so that the white supremacists now have commandeered it. After all these years, they were sidestepping it for a while. They were calling it white privilege. They would call it white nationalism. They called it everything except what it is, white supremacy, because that's the jugular vein. And they know it, and they run from it when black people say it, rather than just the other way around. Black people think that that hurts black people. No, when you call something the way that it is, that's a revelation. And anything that's true, that's revealed, because it's been proven to be true, that hurts the white supremacists more than anything that you can say. And I'm saying that flat out. And black people should start using it even more. Oh, now I'm not talking about this ism and that ism, and I'm not even talking about, you know, ancient black history and the pyramids. I'm talking about the system of white supremacy. How about that? Try that on for size and see if you don't clear the room. It works every time. Why? Because it's true. It's what all talk is all about. It's not really about black history. The white supremacists will jump on board with that. Say, oh, yeah, you black people built everything. Well, we don't have no problem with you saying that. You know, parade it up and down the street. Get drunk on it. All right? Sag on it. Oh, yeah, you know. You invented the computers and everything. Oh, yeah, you did that way before we did. Oh, yeah, hey, pour it on, all right? Just do what I say do when I tell you to do it. Now, I'll see if you understand that, you smart Negroes, with all of your knowledge of black culture and all of your hairdos and tattoos and whatnot, as long as you do what I say do. I don't care what you say about anything, as long as you don't understand the system of white supremacy, what it is and how it works. And apparently you all don't understand anything about that, and I don't intend for you to ever find out. Now, that's the doctrine of the white supremacists. And when you start saying it like that and say that you're aware of it, that's when the backing off starts. They don't come forward on that. Except to hurt you. Now, if it starts taking effect, you're going to get hurt because you're going at the jugular vein. But as long as black people are using the term America, say America did this to black people, America did that to black people, they'll just say, oh, you're anti-American. See, these are word traps. See, the glue that holds the system of white supremacy together is not just violence. It's indirect violence, like swords and guns. It's indirect violence, like the type of words that they use. They trick black people into attacking a thing called America. And in the system of white supremacy, America doesn't exist. The white supremacists don't care anything about borders. There's no such thing as America.
Thanks for rolling with us, folks. We have one of our top scholars with us. He's Neely Fuller Jr. He's Dr. Wilson's mentor. He's got a book out. The short title for the book is Code. We're going to have him tell you the exact title, the real title of the book before he leaves. But before we left for that short break, though, we're having a discussion about why black folks and we as black people should not just be having endless, mindless conversations with each other. I know some people probably want to practice this after the show. They may get some grief. So Neely Fuller Jr., help us out. We're going to start getting pushback from their friends for not having these mindless, endless conversations.
Yes, I mean, because prisoners of war, and which is what we are, it's understandable. See, everything that black people do is not a mystery. Nothing is, really. If you just look at it and figure out why we do what we do and why we go about doing what we do, we call it black culture. We get to the place we even brag about it. And the white supremacists look at each other in amazement when we do that. You know, black culture, that stuff that black people do, and they are praising it. They think that what they are doing is the greatest thing that can possibly be done and can't get no better. Is that what they think? Let them think that on. That's good for us. Black culture, just the way it is. You don't have to prove nothing. Just keep it just the way it is. That, we would love that. All right? Everything that they brag about, we will help them do more of it. Because it's no threat to us at all. It's good for the business of white supremacy. We'll applaud it and finance it, as much of it as they want. And so when black people want to what we call get together, what do black people really mean when we say, what we got to do is get together? That's a standard thing that you get from black people. Every communication, every classroom. Now what we really got to do. Now this might be a mystery to y'all, but y'all listen carefully now, because I'm going to give you the formula for black success. Now, are you ready? I mean, you got your pencil ready? You got your notebook ready? Now, this is it. This is it. This is it. What we got to do is get together. And somebody holds up their hand in the classroom and say, well, professor, what do you mean by getting together? See, because words are supposed to have meaning. Well, we got to get active. Oh, okay, write that down. Get together, get together. This is first grade now. And then number two, be active. And how you spell active? Okay, got that down. V-E. Okay. Anything else? Organize. Ah, yeah, that's a good word. Everybody got that? Everybody? Okay, walk them down the aisle and check. Make sure everybody got organized down there. Get together. Get active. Organize. Okay, what else? That's it. Come back next week and hear the same thing. And the same thing after that. And the same thing after that. And the same thing after that. Now, if we stop and think about it, that's what we have been doing. We have whole conventions, five-day conventions, and on that last day, everybody's come 1,000 miles by plane, checked in the hotels, you know, got their rooms straight and all like that, checked in their baggage, checked it out, baggage, I mean, got your social distances and all like that. Big convention, 3 days, and we came away with, black people got to get together, got to get active, got to organize. All right, be back in 2 years, and we will do the same thing again. Now, Einstein had an analysis of that. He said, that's the definition of insanity. And we wonder why nothing ever happens that's different. Now, what is Neely Fuller saying that needs to happen that's different? I'm saying we need a code that's addressed to each individual person about all the do's and all the don'ts on a daily basis, right down to the finest detail, because the white supremacists have that. About time the average white person in the system of white supremacy who chooses to do so decides to really participate earnestly in the system of white supremacy, rather than rebel against it, which very few white people do. They know the white code. By the time they're around 15 to 17 or 18 years old, they'll make mistakes, all right, you know, because they don't get covered in everything, but they just pick it up by osmosis. They don't have to go to meetings or anything. They just look around and see how the world is run, and they just join in, the average white person. And if you ask them, are you a white supremacist? Do you believe in racism? Oh, no, no. What are you talking about? Well, But see, they are already born into the royal family. It's not personal. You know, if you're born into a family, you do what the family does. I mean, that's natural. You know, and black people shouldn't get mad about it from that standpoint. You can be angry about the system. That's why we keep picking out individual officers and say, you know, I'm going to march in the street for about 17 days until they hang that guy. Okay, so they take him and hang him. Now, what about the other 15 or 20 million coming behind him? Because he's in the system of white supremacy. He's born in it. He did what he did because that's all he knows. That's all the other ones that's coming behind him know. They never been taught anything else. So it's not individualistic on that level. It's individualistic on a day-to-day level because they are following the code, the white code. That's why a lot of them look around in amazement and say, what are you getting mad at me for? I'm treating black people the way you're supposed to treat them. You know, well, why single me out? This is all I've heard all my life. And now you're going to get mad at me and punish me? I can see the pain in some white people's faces. When other white people are telling them, we're going to sacrifice you, because that's covered in the book, too. See, it's what the code calls, the counter-racist code called white sacrifices. The system of white supremacy, they throw certain white people up under the bus after they teach them systematically, by example and everything else, how to treat black people. And then one of them goes a little too far, attracting too much attention. That's where the problem is. And they tell him, hey, Ralph, come in here. Now, you know you're white, and I'm white, but we're going to have to sacrifice you. I mean, you attracted too much attention. See, that's one thing we don't do. We don't let people know exactly right in their face what we're doing. This is the modern day. It's called the refinement stage of white supremacy. You're doing it the old-fashioned way. We got other people assigned to do that. But, you know, you got to follow the code. So you didn't. So we're going to have to sacrifice you. We're going to have to execute you. You blew up that school, or you blew up that building, and you killed all those people. A whole lot of them were black, and you intended to do it. And we applaud that. But you shouldn't have done it the way that you did it. You should have done it in such a way it was an accident. Now, you know better. You should have learned better if you didn't know better. So they sacrifice a certain number of white people and think nothing of it. Just like in any organized crime organization. Godfather 1. Tessio, you broke the code. And Tessio said, can you let me off, Tom? Can you get me off the hook? They can't do it, Sally. You know, you don't violate the code. You know, we like you. You like us. We all eat together, you know, go fishing together. Been knowing each other for years. But you violated the code, Sally. We got to take you for a ride. You know the rules. You've done it yourself. Come on. You know. And so the white supremacists operate the same way. If you understand Godfather 1 and 2, you understand the whole system of white supremacy. Black people got to understand that. We think it's personal. It ain't personal, like Tom Hagen said in Godfather. It's business. It's business. It's business, Sonny. Your father knew it was business, you know. And then Sonny's all hot-headed and whatnot, ran off from his bodyguard. That's a violation of the code, the gang code. And he got whacked. It's the same way in the system of white supremacy. If you understand the ancient Roman Empire and you understand what they call the old-fashioned gangs, Al Capone and all of them, and the New York gangs, some of them maybe are still around, and Godfather 1 and 2, you know, really, they got an argument, all of them. I mean, you know, Luciano and Al Capone, all of them, they can say, hey, we're just small-timers compared to the system of white supremacy as a whole, all right? Because we're just patterned after them. It's just the format of the old Roman Empire. That's all it is, put on a color basis. That's all the system of white supremacy is. Anybody who has studied the history of the Roman Empire, just a little bit of it, or studied Godfather 1 and 2, just a few hours looking at them, you understand the system of white supremacy if you look at it that way, because it operates on the same principle.
Right. We're coming up on a break real soon. But when we take the break and we come back, I want you to explain to our audience, you know, why we see so much the quote-unquote black-on-black crime, black folks fighting each other. Why are we turning on each other and not turning on the oppressor? Is that part of the code? And if so, how do we break it? Folks, you want to join us and reach in on this conversation, hit us up at 800-450-7876 to speak to Neely Fuller Jr. Your call's next on 1450 WOL, where information is power. Just stay with us, folks. Class is in session. The professor is Neely Fuller Jr. is one of our top scholars discussing racism, white supremacy. And I tell you, you've got to listen very, very keenly because Neely likes to use logic, cause and effect, to prove his points. Before we left for the break, my question to him was, why do we seem to turn on each other? You know, we could have a beef with three people in the room and two of them are black, you know, and one white, or two white and one black. We always turn on the black person, always the person that looks like us. What's going on there? What's happening with that mix?
Well, we've been trained that way. Now, what's the antidote for that? The compensatory code says you minimize conflict by minimizing unnecessary contact, what I talked about before, just a few minutes before. That's in the code book itself. It says that. Minimize conflict by minimizing non-necessary contact. I mean, that getting together should always have a huge qualification for it. Just a simple illustration. Hey, Will, when you coming over? I ain't seen you in a long time. Well, you haven't seen me in a long time because I'm over here doing something constructive. And if I come over there, it's got to be for a constructive reason. Now, what's the constructive reason that I'm coming over there, Brad? This is a telephone conversation, hypothetically, that I'm giving right now. You know, two black people talking to each other. This is the way it should go. Brad, if I come over there, I ain't been over there in about 3 months. Now, if I come over there, what are we going to be doing? Oh, we're just going to get together and, you know, we'll sit around with some of the guys and kick it. All right, somebody going to kick the bucket, all right? If you know black people, somebody going to kick the bucket behind that kicking it. That's what that really means. You know, start drinking and snorting. Next thing you know, somebody says something and everybody laughs. That's all it takes. And then the man said, well, man, I ain't said nothing like that about you. Now, you don't need to talk to me like that. Say, well, man, you don't have to get mad about it, wouldn't I? Say, well, I ain't mad, but you shouldn't talk to me that way and all like that. I ain't no child. I didn't say you was a child, you know, but you don't like it. You don't have to stay around here. Well, I ain't going to stay around here. I mean, you know, but I'm just letting you know that you don't have to talk to me like, well, that's enough of that, man. I don't want to hear your mouth no more. And the next thing you know, one word calls for another, and then 9mm time. Bam, 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 bam. And then the white supremacist got to come and clean up the mess. And then somebody else might get killed, I mean, when they arrive, okay? Because, they saw somebody, they said somebody got a gun, and they shoot the person they think they had a gun, and that person was holding a coffee cup. So now you got a big, what you call, Negro mess. It's happening somewhere right this minute as we talk. And how did it all get started? Hey, man, what about me coming over there and just kind of hanging out, man, and kicking it? The code says no more of that. Now, that's going to hurt every black person's feelings, including the females, who say, hey, girl, what you been doing? That's typical of what you call Afro conversation. Well, you know, I thought I'd in the neighborhood the other day, and I'll be back over there, so I'll drop by and see you. Next thing you know, you got some gossip going. That's how it all starts. sitting there running out of things to talk about that mean anything. See, when a black person from now on, starting in 2020, that's what I mean by code. I'm not talking about some long, drawn-out process. Codification is about things we can do right now. I mean, that will be phenomenal, have a phenomenal effect on the system of white supremacy, which we are having no effect at all right now. It's in the details, what we do every minute of every day. So to continue what I'm saying, here's Helen going over to see Willie Mae, okay, or Kashisha, or whatever her name is, and you're going to sit up there, and the next thing you know, you're talking about one of the other girlfriends who ain't there, and then that word gets around. Now you got a whole lot of unnecessary hard feeling, all right, because you're running off your mouth in somebody's house or over at the beauty parlor. And that, you know, and she heard that somebody said this and passed on to Nancy who said that, and then it's passed on to somebody else who said that. Now it's a great big falling out. About what? About a whole lot of nothing. So if you don't start off talking about a whole lot of nothing, it ain't going to be a whole lot of nothing said. You say, oh, yes, I'll come over and pick you up and take you to the hospital or take your mother to the hospital, you know. That's something specific, and that's something constructive. You said your car is broken down. I'll come by. Nancy, I'll come by and pick you up, and I'll take you or your mother to the hospital, and, you know, you all do what you have to do. I'll bring you back, and then I got 1,001 things to do with my children, so I'm going to get back to them. Now, that type of relationship, if you cement it like that, rather than just hanging out, making girl talk, all right, it's the same with the black fellas, just hanging out, that little small talk. That small talk turns out to be big talk. The big talk turns out to be something that brings about anger. Anger brings about a fight. In the case of black males, almost invariably, in this day and time, a killing. And somebody asks, little boys, you know, 12 years old, say, well, what happened to my cousin? What happened to my daddy? Well, he got killed last night. Well, how did that happen? And when people go into detail, a lot of people really say, you know what? When I stop to think about it, I don't know how that happened. Man, they was just talking and whatnot. Next thing you know, everybody's shooting, man. Then Jack pulled out his pistol because he always carries it because he thought somebody's going to shoot him. And he wound up shooting Everett. He wasn't even intending to shoot Everett. He was trying to shoot Clyde. Now he's all messed up. See, that's black life. And we enjoy it. So how do you stop it? Don't go to nobody's house or don't make contact with nobody by phone or by body contact unless you have a specific plan for being, making that contact. And that contact and that plan is very specific and very constructive. I'm coming over and help you paint the barn or the garage on Saturday. I'm coming over, and I'll bring some of the stuff. You make sure that you bring this, you know, to paint and all like that, and I'm coming over and help you paint it because we've been putting it off. You say you need it painted, and I'm going to bring a couple of guys with me to know all about paint so they can help us do it. And as soon as that paint job is over, don't sit around and start talking about let's go to the house and kick it. No. Don't go inside that house. Paint that garage. Put your stuff, ladder, and everything else on the back of that truck and say, okay, Willie, that man, that's a good job. That really looks good. You did something constructive. And take off and don't come back until the next job is to be done. Now, if every black person on the planet sticks with that, we'll see a phenomenal difference in black contacts. In fact, we can make that a slogan. All black contacts got to be constructive or something like that. Somebody can come up with something like that. We need slogans that really mean something about doing something. See, not just abstract slogans. They were all right at their time, but we need to be more specific from now on. Gonna have a slogan that's about doing something, getting something done, rather than just talk about how everybody feels, getting high on empty air.
Hold on a second. We got some folks want to talk to you. 800-450-7876. You know how to raise your hand. That's what you do. Just dial up those numbers. Speak to Professor Neely Fuller Jr. Eric is doing the same. He's calling us from South Carolina. Eric, you're on with Neely Fuller Jr. Has Eric left us? I think Eric has left us. Let me ask you this question, though, because you mentioned one time that we're in a prison. Can you explain that to us? And there's a warden. You use that as a metaphor for us, how to behave for us as black folks.
Yes. How do prisoners of war behave? Prisoners of war have a code: name, rank, and serial number. That's the information you give when you're a captain. See, that's a code. It may not be amount to very much, but it's some type of code. Everything that works has a code to it. Everything that doesn't work is just sloppy, like just about everything that black people do. Sloppy. Sloppiness in everything, every move that we make, our neighborhoods and everything, just sloppy. You know, because we don't have a code. We don't have a strict code about every move that we make. And I'm not talking about anything that anybody imposes, like the mafiosa. See, a code that's going to work for the long run has to be inspired, not dictated. Dictatorships don't work. When people operate on their own because they know that it's in their best interest, and people like to act in their best interest if they are not crazy, all right, like most of us are, including me, up to a point. Because you can't be in the system of white supremacy and not be crazy. But you can just brush that aside. The way to get sane is to become codified, meaning you only do the things that have constructive effect. That's the key. It's not complicated at all. We don't have a code. We don't ask questions. How do you solve problems? Questions and answers. And every question has a correct answer. And every answer should, when you find it to a problem, should have a constructive effect when you solve that problem. That's the equation.
Right. Hold that thought right there, because we got to take another break. And when we come back to you, I want you to tell us about the book, how we can get the book, and explain how the code works and how we can put it into action, like right away, like tomorrow. If we went in our daily goings on, I was going to say when we go to work or go to school, but many of us are still not doing that. 800-450-7876. You got a question for Neely Fuller Jr.? Raise your hand and by dialing those numbers right here on 1450 WOL, where information is power. And that's just staying with us, folks. I guess one of our top scholars, Dr. Wilson's mentor, his name is Neely Fuller Jr. We'll get back to him in a second. But let me just remind you, tomorrow we're going to open up discussing the debate, tonight's vice presidential debate. And then later on, we've got another of our scholars going to join us, chematologist, Brother Ashwa Kwesi. But before we left for the break, Neely Fuller Jr., I was asking you if you could tell folks about the book, the full title, because it's got a long title for the name of the book and how they can get a copy of the book.
Well, I've got three titles to it, and all of them are equal, really. But some of them will not make sense, and that's the main title. I say, the United Independent Compensatory Code System Concept. That's to give people a ballpark idea of what the book is about. And those words, each one of those words is explained in the book itself, because the United Independent Compensatory Code System Concept makes no sense at all unless they are explained. And that's a lesson within itself, too. Never walk away from a conversation where people use words and you didn't know what they were talking about, because that's just like not having a conversation. That's a part of the code. Now, there's another part of the title, says a compensatory counter-racist code. Now, that sounds kind of cumbersome, too. All right, and that's in big letters right on the cover of the book. But then the smaller print down at the bottom says a textbook workbook for thought, speech, and or action for victims of racism. And racism, of course, is white supremacy. There's no other form of racism other than white supremacy. But it's called a textbook workbook for thought, speech, and or action for victims of white supremacy, racism. So that's what you want people basically to really understand. That's why I wrote the books. They are for people who perceive themselves as victims of white supremacy, prisoners of war of the system of white supremacy, which is what I say that we are. If you go by the definition of prisoner, go by the definition of war. So that raises a question. All questions should be answers. And the books are you know, about questions and answers, what questions to ask people, how to talk about racism, how not to talk about it, how to talk about anything within the context of white supremacy, whether it's economics, education, entertainment, labor, law, politics, religion, sex, war, how to talk about it, what words to use, what words to ask questions about when you're talking about it, on an individual basis, every day, on the job, wherever you happen to be, and how to get the answers that you're looking for, and also things to do and things not to do, things that you never do if you want to have a constructive effect, if you want to win instead of losing, because black people have a huge reputation for losing everything of value and holding on to everything that ain't worth nothing. And we need to get rid of that. That's what a code is all about, getting rid of all the baggage that we are carrying and that the white supremacists put upon us, and getting rid of the words that we are given that take us down the incorrect roads, and the way that we talk to people, the way that people talk to us. Just dump all of that and do it fast, not dragging it out like we've been doing. We just drag everything out. We've been taught to just drag, and we need to move at lightning speed now. A supersonic speed, and a counter-racist code should be designed to help us do that. What I mean by that is solve problems and solve them overnight. And when I say overnight, I'm not talking about 15 weeks. I'm talking about overnight, literally. A problem that you got right tonight here in 2020 in October, that tomorrow you don't have that problem. That's what you're slam dunking. That's what real counter-racist codification is about. It's about looking at a problem and say, hey, there's a best way to solve this problem and a worse way. It's just a matter of asking enough questions and coming up with enough answers to get this problem solved in the best possible way. And you can get the book by going to producejustice.com. And there's a word guide even that's a part of the book. I tried to get it in one volume, but that would have been just too crowded. And maybe in the future I'll figure out a way to get it in one volume. But I call it the Compensatory Counter-Racist Code. Go to producejustice.com. It's a how-to-do book for the individual person. You can take it to organizations, but you use it as an individual. And you don't force anything on anybody. You just reveal what's in it and talk about it in schools, anyplace else, and let people see what they think. And people pick and choose what you can use that works for you. That's the beauty of it. You only pick out what works for you. The part that doesn't work for you, just forget about it. Say, hey, that might work for somebody else. I ain't doing none of that. I'm going to get something that works for me. Because the book is about getting things to work for you as an individual person if you're classified as non-white. Go to producejustice.com. That's producejustice.com.
All right. Hang on a second, Nita. Got some people want to talk to you. 800-450-7876. Nick's calling from Naptown. He's online too. Nick, you're on with Neely Fuller Jr.
Thank you. I hate to go there, but I hope I'm misunderstanding. But when you say, you know, the white supremacist, if they're that supreme, you know, I'll call on words. But if they're that supreme, what's the sense in having a code? Because it ain't going to work anyway because they're supreme. And they always have, this is what I'm hearing, they've always been supreme, always will be supreme. So hopefully I'm hearing wrong. You know, and all, you know, for instance, this talk that the African American was the first civilization rulers and established the first kingdoms on this earth. Well, how do they do that if the white man has always been so supreme? And so correct me if I'm wrong. I'd like to be corrected.
Well, for one thing, I never said a lot of that that's been said that you're saying. I never said that. I said it will keep going the way that it is. That's the law of inertia. See, if there's a system that's in place, the only thing that will move that system is another system. So the system is you replace the system of white supremacy with the system of justice. But you have to have a mechanism for doing it. Because the white supremacists had what for putting it together? Okay. They had a code. A code is nothing but certain things you do, certain things you don't do. Certain things you say, certain things you don't say. Under any circumstance. All right? The white supremacists came up with that. Black people have never even attempted to have a code. We just talk about what we used to do or what our ancestors did. What our ancestors did worked at that time for their conditions. Until what? Until the white supremacists walked in. They didn't have a code for handling the system of white supremacy. Now, why do I say that? Because the evidence is right in front of you. Black people all over the world did not have a code for defending themselves against the system of white supremacy. And where is the evidence of that statement I just made? Everywhere. See, if you've got a counter-racist code already in place, when racism arrives and it's a real counter-racist code, we wouldn't be having this conversation. There'd be no such thing as black radio. There'd be no such thing as writing black books. There'd be no such thing as we got to go out and demonstrate against police brutality. Down with racism. We wouldn't be doing any of this. Our ancestors didn't know what to do about the system of white supremacy. Now, the first step that any general understands is I'm going to look at my map, and I'm going to look at the history of that last battle that I fought that I lost. Like any football coach, we understand it when it comes to football. What does a football coach do when he's in his second season and he lost every game in the first season? And they're going to keep him as a coach, him or her. And studies every play in every last one of them games. And then, if he keeps it up, that losing coach that everybody laughed at will turn out being what? A winning coach if that coach comes up with a code for every game and every player that's a winning play. Every move that quarterback makes is going to be a winner. He knows that guy is going to catch that ball before he even throws it. He knows where he's going to be. He's not guessing because they have gone over this 1,000 times. See what I mean? Amen. We understand that. Black people understand that when it comes to football and basketball. It's not that we're dumb by nature. We understand it when we try to understand something, but we have never tried to understand the system of white supremacy. We consider that a waste of time until we're in some kind of big trouble or we lose that job or some white person calls them the N-word about 15 times and gets away with it and the black person winds up getting fired and the white person didn't. Then all of a sudden, we get interested in racism. We got to stop doing that and spend full time getting rid of racism by having a code for doing so and figuring out, just like that football player, what? Just like our ancestors didn't do, and that is find out what? Where the mistakes were made. Every general General Patton, General Rommel, Napoleon Bonaparte, you name them. Anytime they won anything, they won because they had a code for doing so.
I see. Well, forgive my misinterpretation. I just, you know, I was looking for the hope factor there and the debate. That's supreme and everything. Where is the hope? But I see there is some.
Yes, we need a code. That's the missing link. That's what I'm saying. And in answer to your question, we haven't even tried to construct a code. And what is the code? Just a way of getting something done, and you know it's going to work. You know it's going to work. You know it's going to work. You know, just like a basketball player who has practiced a certain shot, and he gets to that position on the court. He's done it so many times almost in his sleep. He knows it's going in. He ain't guessing. Why? He got it codified. That's why. He knows. He knows there ain't going to be no net, nothing. That ball went through there like magic. The net didn't even move because he's done it so many times. He codified it. That's what he did.
And that's where we got to move, and that's the code for us. Nick, I thank you for your call. Nick reaching out to us from Indianapolis. Neely Fuller Jr., thank you, and thank you for sharing all this information with us, and we'll talk to you later.
Thank you very much for inviting me, sir. And
yes,
thank
sir.
The listeners, too, including the critics.
Will do. Neely Fuller Jr., folks, we're out of here. Stay strong, stay positive, and stay healthy. We'll see you tomorrow, 4 o'clock, right here on 1450 WOL, where information is power.